Yes, it's that time of the week where we welcome Dennis Stewart. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, my dear.
How are you? Great. Thank you. And it's good to have you. Now, Dennis, for the last couple of sessions, you've been emphasising the potential of particular foods to help fight or prevent various diseases. You exhaustively looked at the long history of use of cabbage. And today you want to look at an equally well-known food, particularly to help people fighting cancer. Mm. But first of all, you want to warn of the danger of bypassing medical treatment and falling into the trap of quack cancer treatments. Food therapy is a complementary therapy, not an alternative.
Look, I'm glad you raised that, Amanda, because I think it's important for listeners to realise that there is a whole industry, particularly on the net, which purports to be able to cure cancer or treat cancer, usually involving substances which are, in my opinion, very dubious, potentially very dangerous, normally very expensive, and I underline that, very expensive. And at the end of the day, I've not observed any great benefit in people going down that pathway, particularly when they have made the decision not to exceed or go through normal medical procedures for managing and helping cancer. There are people out there, again, many, many, if you look at the net, who promise suffering people, particularly cancer patients, all sorts of wonderful results if they will do this or do that, go on this diet or that diet, take this herb or this mineral or this vitamin. I say to listeners out there, don't do that. Don't do that. Anything that you do needs to be first of all known or made known to your medical practitioner. And if you are using supportive techniques, nutritional, dietetic, vitamin and mineral, those things that I frequently mention on this program, it is ethical and correct that you run those past your medical managers, particularly your oncologists if you're being treated for cancer, so that they have an understanding of what you're wanting to do, and with their nod, if you like, then you can feel free to use some of the things that we speak about on the program. But I emphasise, if you have a diagnosis of a cancer, you must, let me emphasise, you must utilise the wonderful benefits of the modern medical approach to treating it and see the sorts of things that I speak about frequently on this program as, if you like, complementary therapy. That is, therapy that can work with, run alongside of, augment and perhaps even accelerate or help the medical treatment for even such a nasty condition as cancer. I can talk to listeners at great length of what I have seen in my rooms over nearly 50 years of people that have presented frequently too late, who have bypassed treatment procedures which would have, in many cases, saved their lives, certainly improved their prognosis. It's tragic to see the results of where people think that a lot of what we talk about is in fact alternative medicine. That term is a misnomer. It is complementary medicine, medicine that can be used particularly along nutritional lines, herbs, vitamins, minerals, dietary programs, which can be seen as useful, not always, but useful in order to augment the medical management of the condition. That needed to be said because even in my rooms this week, I had to, unfortunately, talk to a gentleman who had paid a lot of money for a treatment for a condition. Admittedly, it wasn't cancer in this case, but equally sinister. And on reading the information behind what he had been encouraged to purchase from, of course, an American source online, I had to say to him, my dear friend, you've wasted your money. You've wasted your money. But, oh, look, I was told this. It was difficult to compassionately tell the dear man that, in my opinion, what he had been sold was useless and that he'd wasted a lot of money, that his condition would not in any way respond to what was promised to him. That's an example of what I've seen frequently, and that's why I need it, particularly seeing we're going to be talking today about a food, not a particular commercial product, but a food which has a good reputation around the world, from Europe to the West Indies, to many parts of the world. This food we're talking about has been used and increasingly documented in technical papers, one of which I'll refer to today for those that are a bit cynical about what we're going to say, to point out that this particular well-known food has a potential to help in prevention, in the treatment, and certainly to handle some of the side effects associated with the therapy that's often needed to treat a cancer, the depression, the fatigue, the lack of appetite, all those sorts of things. We'll talk about a simple, amazing, inexpensive food that the listeners will know about. We'll look at it.
Okay. Well, actually, I just want to say that's really good advice that, as someone that's been through cancer, so many people just wanted to say, oh, you should take this, you should take this, and I'd say, look, I'm just going to talk to my oncologist first and go by what they say. Good. And then if I need extra stuff, of course, but just, don't tell people what they should take.
Yeah. Everyone's your doctor.
That's right.
Everyone knows your problem.
And it's overwhelming enough without having every man and his dog telling you what you should take.
It's very distressing.
It is.
But what I have noticed, and it might surprise listeners to know that I see many patients that present who want help in battling the cancer, either in its active phase or in the post-operational phase. I have not met too much objection from the medical sections, good oncologists and good GPs. I've not met too much objection from them because they are increasingly aware of the fact that people with cancer who are fighting cancer or frightened of cancer will look, regardless of what they might say or not, they will look around for things that might lift their game, so to speak. And as a result, I find that with the things that I recommend, there hasn't been too much objection, that it is looked at. Many of the medical people will have computers that they can check some of the remedies that I mentioned, some of the foods that I mentioned, some of the reference texts that I mentioned. And this is one of the things that I get accused of, even in my own circles, that, you're too medical, you're too technical. No, I have been a technical academic all my life, both in my vocational studies and in my university studies. And what I like to think is that I can support, to a large extent, much of what I say and refer to references and texts that listeners, medical practitioners in particular, can look at and see that there might be a valid way of, in fact, harnessing this. I'm on the verge of actually writing a letter to the university here, of which I was a conjoint associate professor a number of years ago, suggesting that a topic that I taught to my own students under Southern Cross Herbal School, which was a private teaching institution that I handed over eventually to the university, I have been thinking of encouraging someone to consider perhaps an elective or a necessary component in the medical or other allied health care sections, a topic be taught simply called food therapy, in order to inform undergraduates in medicine or other health disciplines the potential of food being seen as a medicine. I'd love to see that taken on board. I believe the course would be very popular and would tend to support a lot of what I've already taught years ago and what I've frequently mentioned on this program. I was thinking about that this morning when I was reviewing this particular herb and this particular topic. And I thought I should write under my letterhead, which mentions that I was a conjoint here at the uni, and suggest that some consideration be given to this topic that you and I have spoken about, because it is literally complementary medicine at the best, not a competitive system, looking at foods particularly that might be able to help a patient who wants to fight the condition, always being monitored by the medical practitioner who can see frequently the potential benefit of using this. I put myself out on a bit of a limb when I say that I can't recollect any client or patient that I have seen who has been struggling with cancer. I can't recollect any of them who, taking on board some of my ideas about complementary medicine, I can't think of too many that haven't done better as a result of taking that on board. I stand to be contradicted, but I know that there are patients out there now listening to this program who would be prepared to vouch for the improvement in their prognosis. Don't use the word cure. The improvement in their prognosis and the improvement in their ability to handle some of the demands of particularly radiation therapy and chemo.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, it's a good idea anyway.
We might spearhead it.
We might spearhead it. Look out. Like Mary from Gwendolyn has done. Hi, Mary. You want to talk about diverticulitis?
Yes, please.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
Hi. Not too bad. Thank you, Dennis.
How can I help you, darling? How can I help you?
Okay. I've had a bad attack of diverticulitis recently. I've been on Movicol for many years.
Yes.
And I've been on probiotics.
Yes.
At 10 billion CFU. And Lactobacillus plant room 299V. How long should I be on the probiotic for?
First of all, I'll ask you a few questions, Mary. Mm-hmm. Do you frequently get diverticulitis?
This was a very bad attack because I was overseas. There wasn't healthy food that I could choose from.
I'll give you a few hints. First of all, I might explain to listeners that diverticulitis is inflammation or infection of the what we loosely refer to as pockets in the bowel. Now, pockets in the bowel, or what we call diverticulum or diverticular lesions, are very common, particularly in our generation, the older generation. They're very popular, and not always do they lead to inflammation or infection. But a couple of things that should be taken on board is that the general way of helping people that periodically experience a nasty episode of diverticulitis, that is infection of these so-called pockets, a good procedure is to make sure that you're using a significant amount of what's called soluble fibre. Now, you've mentioned some substances that you're on and they're okay, but I think it's hard to beat using the herb known as slippery elm for a useful agent to be on all the time to resist the development of diverticulitis. It's one of the old herbs that most herbalists would have used of my generation, a famous American herb, which is renowned for its regulating effect on transit time in the bowel, is renowned for its effect on giving better characteristics to the stool and lessening inflammatory activity. So one of the first things I would suggest to you or any other listener is to go to your health food store and just buy the straight out slippery elm food, that is the powder. I believe in this condition that's the best way of harnessing the herb or the food, call it what you like. And I would suggest you look at take at least a heap teaspoonful of slippery elm food on a daily basis. Now, that's the starting principle, which I suggest, even though when you are free of the condition or any infection, by being on that, you may well lessen the likelihood of further activity, principle number one. The second thing is you are taking some probiotics, and I applaud you for doing that, because probiotics work very well with the slippery elm to create an environment in the large bowel, which is antagonistic also to the bacteria, if you like, that are active in the infection. So that's good that you're doing that, and I would encourage you to stay on that even after the episode that you're working through is over. Thirdly, however, what I suggest you do on a regular basis is go to your supermarket and get some cranberry juice. Now, cranberry is most frequently thought of, and when we talk of cranberry, bilberry comes into the same category. But both those juices are used in Europe for treating diseases of the large bowel as a means of resisting infection. And the way they do that is that their chemistry impregnates the bowel wall and antagonises infection activity. So that's a third principle, the use of a juice such as that to set up a better environment on the large bowel wall due to the astringent principles in those two foods. The only other thing that I would say is that in fighting infection or preventing infection, you can get hold of what are called garlic pearls. Now, these are simple, little, inexpensive preparations of garlic based on garlic oil. They bypass the upper gut and land, if you like, in the intestines, and in their transit through the intestinal tract, they set up a healthy, natural antibacterial action. I think if you were to do those things, you would find the incidence of this condition to be much less. They're simple principles, they're inexpensive, and there is no harmless material in them that I'm aware of.
Okay. What about the Movicol? Should I?
No, look, Movicol is a good preparation. I think you should talk to your specialist. I'm sure he would know of slippery elm, and I'm sure there wouldn't be any problems. But talk to him. It's very safe. I see it more as a food. It could be a good companion to Movicol, but run it past your manager to make sure that he's aware of what you're doing. And then you can sail on and hopefully, with the information I've given you, have fewer and fewer of these wretched episodes.
Thanks for your call, Mary. We really appreciate it and good luck. We have Rosie from Metford on the line. Hi, Rosie. Thanks for holding.
Thank you.
Now, you want to talk about kidney stones?
Yes, my husband and my daughter have both been diagnosed with kidney stones. Oh, and I remember there was, Dennis had said about a herb that we soak in water and then drain and then just drink it.
Okay. That's a nice way of putting it, Rosie, but that's very fundamental herbalism. That is the way that most herbalists would work in a previous era. I started off using what are known as infusions or decoctions. That is where you use the dried herb and infused it in water, either by boiling it or using boiling water. And I still argue that we had some great results using that older way. These days, unfortunately, much herbal medicine, much to my regret, has become based on more sophisticated preparations, not necessarily better, usually more expensive. In fact, I'm leading a bit of a campaign to stop the acceleration of cost in herbal medicine because of the way in which sophisticated herbal preparations have taken over from simpler forms. But I'm happy to say, that one of my most frequently used herbs for addressing particularly recurrent kidney stones and helping to cause the passage of smaller stones, or gravel as we used to call it, pass more freely, is a herb called Java kidney tea. That's how it's known, as Java kidney tea. And basically it is an infusion that is just like making a cup of coffee. And you're right in what you've said. I would have used terminology just as you said. And what it means is taking the herb, botanically known as Orthosiphon stamineus. Now, I'm not expecting you to remember that, but if you were to look at Orthosiphon on the net, you would find that this is one of the most popular remedies used in Malaysia and in Southeast Asia generally, Indonesia, for the management of many kidney conditions. I pride myself, and I shouldn't use that language, but this has been my contribution to the herbal profession, I've introduced some newer herbs into the system, and with great results. The introduction, for instance, of the astragalus 8 formula has changed the whole face here of people battling recurrent viral infections. That was done as a result of my study of that formula. I introduced many years ago St. Mary's thistle when it was unknown in herbal medicine here. I recently, say 10 years ago, after my studies on orthosiphon stamineus, was intrigued with its possibilities and was even more intrigued when, in the European pharmacopoeial literature, the herb is called up there in its medical definition and given the ways and means of using it, and you wouldn't believe it, or you would believe it, in the literature it's presented as an infusion or a herbal tea, exactly as it would be taken in the land where it is most popularly used. Java tea, as it's called, Orthosiphon stamineus is its botanical name, Kumis kuching is its Malaysian name. I basically use the dried herb, and I recommend it be taken, basically a heap teaspoonful of the cut or powdered herb, into a coffee cup, pour on boiling water, let it stand. The water must always be boiled or boiling when you're making a herbal tea, to sterilise it and also to extract from it the active principle that makes it work. And I recommend for people that if you like working to facilitate a particularly gravel or residue of stones, or to stop, in fact, the development of kidney stones, or to assist in the stopping of it, I recommend the taking of 2 to 3 cups of Java kidney tea. Very safe. And by the way, I still argue, as the literature encourages me to do so, particularly the writings of Dr. Rudolf Weiss, that it is one of the few herbs that has the ability to slow down a failing kidney. And that might sound rather, how can I call it, over the top. But I pride myself on the fact that I have treated patients who have been lined up for dialysis, who subsequently going on to Java tea were able to bypass that or not have that, and it demonstrated the overall benefit of this herb, not just for helping lessen the development, assisting in the passage of it, but also in helping chronic kidney conditions where its safety is in its favour.
Yep.
Thank you so much for your call, Rosie.
Thank you very much.
All the best, Rosie. Thank you.
Bye.
Next on the line, we have Trevor. Hi, Trevor. Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
I have a problem with diverticulitis.
Yes.
Is it? And I'm still binding up a bit. So, and plus I have, is it fizzes?
Fissures?
Fissures, is it?
Yes.
A little tear on the, around your...
Around the anal region?
Anal region, yes. Yeah.
Now, do you struggle with this all the time, Trevor?
Yeah, I am at the moment, yeah.
So, and are you experiencing constipation with it, are you?
Yeah.
That's not good.
I've been trying to eat a lot of fibre, drink a lot of water, what they've told me.
Well, let me just tell you something here. Most herbalists would say that slippery elm is the ideal fibre and would disagree with the way in which things like bran are recommended as a good source of fibre, particularly for this condition. I never recommend bran for this condition. I don't see bran as I don't see bran as an ideal fibre. I like the idea of slippery elm because, A, it's soothing, it's water-soluble, and as a result, develops stool characteristics which are much easier to pass, less traumatic, and can even soothe some of the area where there is a fissure. So if you're not using slippery elm powder, I think you could be missing something, and you could get benefit from doing that. What I would suggest as far as the fissures are concerned, that you get hold of some honey ointment. That has that has proven to be a very effective topical way of soothing the tear around the anal region. Yeah. The idea of drinking plenty of fluid is good, but I would suggest that you could be missing out on a benefit coming from the use of slippery elm powder. That's what I would suggest, Trevor. But again, you would be being managed by your doctor. You should let him know. But because it is a food, and that has been the emphasis on this program, because it is a food, there should be no objection to it, and an understanding of how it works will encourage any medical practitioners to see its benefits. I'm still disappointed that slippery elm is not as appreciated as much as it should be in mainstream medicine. It's highly recommended in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia of 1983. There is a lot of clinical use in the herbal profession to support its use. I'm disappointed at this late stage of my life, that of my practice too, that this remarkable remedy that can soothe so many things, irritable bowel, diverticulitis, these sorts of things, it is not well known. Give it a go.
That's very good. No one's ever told me. They've just told me to use the fibre and plenty of water. There's nothing else sort of been directed my way. So.
Well, look, as you know, I never criticise my medical brethren, but there are a lot of things outside of mainstream Western medicine that have an ability to treat conditions which are otherwise not being treated well or well enough. And I mentioned a moment ago my discovery and introduction of Java tea into the management of bladder and kidney conditions has demonstrated to me that there's a whole world of therapeutic possibilities latent in nature and used popularly still by traditional cultures.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Trevor. Appreciate it.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank
no
you.
Problems. Thank Good you. Luck. Just quickly, there's a question, Dennis. Yes. Not me personally, but I take slippery elm capsules as I can't stand the taste of the powder. How many capsules should I take per day for IBS?
Look, it's a good question. I understand some people have difficulty taking the powder. What I suggest to such people is try it with some honey. I believe the powder is the best way of taking it, but if you can't take it that way, for IBS, say take a couple of capsules, two capsules with each meal. That's not a bad way of getting a decent level of slippery elm powder into your system, particularly as in your case, if you can't take the taste of it.
Okay. Next, we've got Patricia on the line. Hi, Patricia. How can we help you?
Hi. I just wanted to say to Dennis, I don't ring up and do these things and that, but I was just fascinated with the slippery elm that you're talking about, and I am just such a believer in it. Everything you say is 150% true. My husband passed away in February, but in the past, he was hospitalised with diverticulitis, and it was unbelievably good. We've used it probably for the last 30 years, the powder.
Good on
and
you.
I find, for the lady who finds it very hard, in water it's not very nice, but I mix it in a little bit of no-sugar lemon cordial.
Good on you.
It goes down beautifully. You don't even really notice the taste of the slippery elm, but it was unbelievable for him and I. If I had a bit of an upset tummy or anything, and that's the only thing that I go to, and it works, every time.
And you've been using it for 30 years?
Oh, such a great product,
And it helps your husband.
I totally agree. I don't know why they don't advertise it more or anything, and that, maybe it's the marketing behind it or something, and that, but it's the best thing, nobody could go wrong using that product, and that, it's so good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Yeah.
Thanks for your feedback. We appreciate it.
We miss you when you're not there, Dennis. I love listening to you. You've got to have a life outside of that, I suppose.
That's right.
All right, you take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Next, we've got, lost it. Tina from The Entrance. Hi, Tina, how can we help you?
Hello, I've got pustular psoriasis on my right hand, which I've had for 6 years.
Oh, dear.
On my palm.
Yes.
I've had light therapy treatment. I had that done for weeks and weeks and months, and at the end of it, he said, well, there's nothing more we can do. You can have, there was an injection I could take, but when I read about it, the contradictions and whatever could happen, I didn't end up taking it. So I just used betamethasone cream, but, yeah.
And does that...
doesn't really do anything.
Does that get rid of it?
No.
No. Look, I can... I don't see a lot of this because it's a very specialist-oriented skin condition.
Yep.
Listeners probably are aware that psoriasis is a skin condition. It's characterised by patches of, dry skin, typically on the elbows and the knees. But the worst case that I treated was a lady from Woi Woi on the Central Coast who presented with your condition, pustular psoriasis, on her feet, and I had never seen it before, and I was reluctant to treat it, and in fact tried to discourage the lady from coming under my management. So I said to her, I said, look, there are some herbs that might be useful for treating this, but look, you might need to be on them for a long time. She said, well, I've had the condition for 11 years. What does it matter?
That's right.
She was a real, to use the term, she was a real card. Fascinating people that used to be in, Woi Woi. Now it's a bit trendy down there. But I put her on a mixture, and she would come to my rooms on a monthly basis. And she ended up getting a bit of a following because in the waiting room she would tell people what she had and show people this terrible condition on the feet. So I'm sure they booked in so they could see the transit of her management. And after she'd been on it 11 months, I kid you not, 11 months of taking the mixture, and it is a mixture, forget about topical things, it was a mixture of typical herbs for this condition. From our tradition, it cleared the condition. And that was the most impressive case that I have helped with it. My my explanation to you would be there are a group of well-known herbs known, this will blow your mind, known as blood purifiers. Now, mainstream mainstream medicos will shake their head and say, there he goes, that quack again. But look, blood purifiers... the old herbs that are used to treat chronic conditions of the skin and the joints. And herbs, for instance, like burdock, yellowdock in particular, Oregon mountain grape. Look, if you're really interested in doing something like this, you should see a medical herbalist. And I'm not pushing myself, I don't need to do that. But you need to seek out a medical herbalist. There should be some on the entrance. If not, you can always come up to Newcastle and get the mixture. Yep. And give it a try.
Yeah, I'll do anything.
It's worth, well, look, it's worthwhile to try. I speak the truth. I know psoriasis is a difficult condition to treat, but perseverance in this case, the lady from...
1 minute, it burns, then it gets itchy, then it splits open, and then it bleeds, and it's on my right hand. So I'm using it all the time.
Well, I can only go on the case of the lady from Woi Woi. It was a fascinating card of a lady. I used to take her shoes off and show the waiting room, and the last time I saw her, her feet was free of this condition for the first time in many years.
Yeah, years ago I had it underneath my right foot.
Yes, that's a typical case.
It disappeared, but now I've got it on my right palm.
Well, you probably need to treat it what I would call constitutionally or holistically. Yep. With something that gets a little bit deeper than just putting something on the skin.
Something topical on, exactly.
Yeah. So if you need to do that, give me a ring and we can see what
we can
do. Thank
you, Dennis. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tina.
Thanks,
Tina. Have a good day. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Next, we've got Anne from Valentine. Hi, Anne. You want to know when Dennis is going to write his book?
I do, because every Friday I can't always hear his wonderful program, and I very much would like to be able to have a reference in the day that you're no longer on the radio.
Well, there you go. Isn't that nice of you, Anne? Look, it might interest you to know that that work is in process, and there will be a chap in the Darling Downs, Danny, listening to this program. He has done a lot of work in editing my book, but it is such an undertaking that I'm way behind And Danny keeps periodically ringing me up, now wanting to know how I'm going with it. All I would say is I'm hoping, before I wind up, to be able to say, well, here's something to remember me by.
I'd like to attend your book launch.
Well, so. Oh, look, I don't think it would sell that many, but I would be happy if it helps some people.
It will.
Understand. I'll let you know, Annie. I'll let you know. Keep listening and you'll know, together with a lot of other people, but it's getting close.
Thanks very much for your call, Anne. Take care. Thank you. Bye. All right, Dennis, we've got about 2 minutes. We've got Dave on the line. Hi, Dave. We'll have to be really quick. Now, you want to know about beetroot juice, apple and honey, and what does Dennis think about it?
Yeah, I've seen it on Facebook. They say it's good for cleansing the blood and the liver and because of nitrates and that in it. What's your take on it, Dennis?
Dave, the topic of beetroot was to be undertaken by me today. You've beat me to it. But my study of beetroot, which is quite significant, indicates that one of its profound uses is a substance, a vegetable, particularly beetroot juice, which can be used to assist in the fighting of cancer and certainly to help manage some of the side effects of cancer that have been brought about as a result, necessarily, of radiation therapy or chemotherapy. I hope to take it up with you or with the listeners next week, but I consider beetroot, beetroot juice, beetroot powder to be an underappreciated, potentially remarkable food to assist people that are struggling against the wretched cancer. I'll talk more about it next week, Dave, because there are other aspects of it that make it very, very useful indeed. I'm glad you rang. We'll spend a session on it next week. We intended to do that this week, but never mind.
Lots of calls. Okay. Thanks very much, Dave. Take care. Bye.
Okay.
Alan. Hi, Alan. We've got about 30 seconds, if you can be really quick.
Yeah, I have an itch on both feet, just behind my toes on the top.
Yes.
And it's red, probably as big as a 50-cent piece on each side, and very, very itchy. And when I get hot with work boots and then it gets worse.
Alan, have you seen your GP about it?
No. Okay. I got some cream from a chemist.
Okay. What I would suggest, because I'm running out of time, is go to your GP. It sounds as though it's fungal.
Yes, well, I have an antifungal cream.
Well, see your GP. If you're not getting any with it, do as I always recommend, get it investigated.
Thanks very much for your call, and you can always give us a call back if you have any more issues. Thanks a lot, Alan. Thanks very much, Dennis. We'll catch up with you next week.
We will indeed.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.